Hello and welcome to Stories of Success, your listening experience for self-development. It is here where I, Volker Baluder, as your host, regularly interview interim and fractional CXOs to understand and share more about the emerging group of people that serve companies as interims in leadership positions. Join me here on Season 5 to learn more about this space and how you can become a successful interim and fractional leader. If you want to find out more about myself or what Baluder Partners can do for you in the area of sales consultancy, please visit www.baluderpartners.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please share and give me a 5-star rating. And now, without further ado, let's welcome my guest and please enjoy the show. So today I welcome Lena Andiken, who is one of the partners at Curve. Curve being a performance marketing agency, and you might remember my guest Oren Greenberg. He founded actually Curve, and Lena is one of the partners, but we can dive into that as we go along. Additionally, Lena is, if I say similar to Oren as well, she works as an interim and fractional CMO, so chief marketing officer, but also has a sales background. So we touched on that just before we went live. So maybe that's a rabbit hole we might go down today. Who knows? So she is advising companies on all things really related to marketing. But let's hear it from herself, what she has been up to, what her background is. So Lena, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Volker. Nice being here. Thank you. So yes, just as you mentioned, I am one of the partners at Curve. Curve is a growth marketing agency, and we work with scale-ups. And my background is in B2B, sales and marketing. And I help my clients with two things predominantly. So I help with marketing strategy. I focus on the basics, really. I help with their target audience research, with positioning, with messaging. And then, as you mentioned, I also work as CMO, and I help them with execution of that strategy.
I'm trying to understand the Curve model. So is that, if I say it's an agency, do you have people working with you as well then? So is that a bigger team, or is it just you?
So the way it works, when we start working with the client, we determine where that client needs support. And usually we engage partners who are experts in particular channels, and it can be myself working alongside 2, 3, 4, 5 people who are experts in their field. So we can go in as a team if it's a big scope.
Okay. So you essentially become a chief marketing officer for that company. Yeah. And kind of like do the project management for that, yes, company on marketing.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So how did you end up there?
How did I end up? So my transition from in-house to interim happened last year, and my trigger going into this more flexible way of working was my maternity leave, actually. I wanted to do something more flexible and project-based, and I just wanted to be able to choose when I work and how I work, and interim seemed like a solution to this problem. So I was very lucky to join Curve last year, and that's how I'm here now.
Okay. So essentially it's family, it's flexibility, so to work around the kit.
Yes, exactly. So there is actually one more reason. My background is in sales. I really enjoyed the aspect of selling to different clients and that interaction with different people and that exposure to different markets and different companies. And when I switched to in-house marketing back in my career, I was actually really lacking that element of exposure to different companies. Because your client essentially is your internal sales team. So I really miss that. And again, being interim and working for an agency offers you that variety and diversity and that exposure. So now I feel that I'm doing something more interesting because you meet with different people all the time, you work with different companies. So I enjoy it much more than in-house.
Yeah, because I know some of my guests, they have been in-house for, I don't know, 15, 20 years or some 10 years. And, you know, similar to you, to yourself, want to have more flexibility and, you know, just want to get out. I mean, for me personally, I ended up, and I think it's just typical for the digital industry, I ended up helping companies to get off the ground, to be sold, you know, to other companies, positioning, et cetera. And I ended up, you know, taking redundancy every, you know, 12 to 24 months. And I ended up thinking, why would I charge them, you know, if I say on a PAYE, if I can do that on a day rate, maybe working a few days less, getting the same results and making more money on the way, right?
Yes.
So it was a no-brainer for me. And if I say I haven't looked back since, although, you know, you always come across companies and, you know, and they want you full time. But who knows what the new year brings. So if I say for the listeners, the time of recording, we're just at the beginning of January. I know it doesn't go live until later on this year. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting year ahead. I mean, in terms of, I know you just, if I say, started on the journey a year or so ago. What have you learned? What is kind of like, you know, to say the key moments maybe of that part of the career?
That's a good question. Before I started, I thought it's going to be really difficult and really challenging to come into a company and then try to figure things out really quickly. And I was really hesitant. I thought, oh my God, that's going to be so tough. But then I realized that actually, it's not as difficult as it seems.
Yeah.
So that was a big eye opener. You know, I just learned if you have a certain level of confidence, you can probably get up to speed pretty quickly, because a lot of startups, a lot of scale-ups, they have many similarities. So that was a big eye opener.
Yeah, I found that is a lot. You know, you learn essentially from every client. You learn a little bit, and then you can, if I say, without, I know Stephen said on the podcast as well, without obviously taking confidential information across, you can take frameworks across, right? And see what works for one client might work for the other. I mean, do you think it's a nice segue to look at it from a client perspective? I mean, what a lot of people have said is, if it's a, it's a booming trend, right? Someone called it the gig economy for the C-level, right? I mean, you have companies like the Portfolio Collective coming out. There's an IT-based one that got mentioned before. There's Scalewise, et cetera. So there are different companies that work as interim recruiters, or however you want to call them, or intermediate matchmakers, and LinkedIn moves into that space. I mean, obviously, if I say we're a little bit biased, so we say, you know, of course, it is the future of how we work. But what's your opinion? What do you think? Is that, you know, the way forward? If I say maybe also due to COVID, etc.
Well, it probably depends on individual preferences. Some people they are happy with predictability and stability, and they are fine to work in one place for 10, 15 years. And perhaps they're comfortable navigating internal politics, because I believe if you stay somewhere for 10, 15 years, you have to be really good at that, and you have to excel. And then for some people like us, you know, we get bored. And we want variety and we want flexibility, and also we're comfortable with uncertainty. and unpredictability, and perhaps we can afford, you know, to have those gaps which happen. Sometimes you work very hard all the time. Sometimes you don't work. You have a few weeks gap when you don't have clients. And if you're happy with that, then of course that's the way forward. So I think there always will be two camps: people who prefer that more traditional way of working, and then those who just are done with it.
What do you think from a company perspective? Do you think more companies will start looking at interim and fractional leaders?
Probably yes. So we're seeing a lot of clients in quite early stage in terms of their company life cycle. And so the requests they come to us with, they need to validate their product. They need to essentially prove their ability to scale on a particular channel or a couple of channels in order to enter the second stage of their life. As you know, hiring full-time team is very expensive and it's very time consuming, and they don't have that time and they don't have that money. So they want to get results fast in order to go to their investors and say, hey, this is working. It's just a question of mathematics. If we put 5 times more money into this, we can scale. So that's where we come in, and that's where we help, and we're able to get in very quickly and deliver those results for them, and then in the future, once they get that funding, once they see that they're able to prove their growth, they hire a full-time team. That's one of the scenarios. So going back to the question, so yes, I think that more and more companies will have the demand for interim teams, especially scale-ups.
Yeah, because I get the feeling, obviously having recorded a few episodes at this point already, that there seems to be growing demand. And someone mentioned, I think it was actually Oren that mentioned it originally, saying it's very popular in the States already. So which means, you know, if I say, you know, if like most trends, it will follow to be, you know, popular in the UK and then Germany as well. And when I spoke to Portfolio Collective just before Christmas, again, last year to whenever this goes live, they said there's definitely a trend they're seeing in the States as well. And it's a whole new way of working, right? People, to your point, want to have a more flexibility. They want to have a lot more, if I say, you know, doing what they like rather than being stuck in a rut and having to do the work, you know, they've been told to work. I think that's changing. And I think, I don't know what you think, but I think COVID will have definitely played a role into that people reevaluating what they want to do.
Yes, exactly. I think COVID, well, it's probably one of the positive impacts of COVID. People are not only driven by money, but the whole concept of work-life balance became even more important, and focusing on your health and time and environment, perhaps, because going to the office also, you know, carries certain disadvantages. So yes, I think so. I think that, of course, COVID is a horrible thing overall, but, you know, if there is some silver lining, then probably that is.
I think it is. I mean, you just mentioned the office. I haven't had a proper office, but my home office for the last 2 years, I think, now. Yeah. And I enjoy that, personally, because I now have all the equipment here, right? And you know, yeah. I couldn't even imagine sitting somewhere and having like a desk in an office, if that makes sense, and have a picture of my family there or something, you know, like the traditional way of working.
Yeah. Office is not, so I think I sometimes I do miss office. When I was working for companies in-house, I really liked my colleagues and, you know, that office banter. I miss it, of course. But the worst thing is morning commute. So you're in London as well, and you know yeah. how bad it was every morning. You yeah. get up 6:30 and it's cold and it's winter, and then you get into the train and oh, just yeah. so bad.
I mean, I even moved, you know, I'm living further down south. So I'm just north of Brighton, which means I used to be, for all the listeners here that use Southern Trains, I used to be on the always late 7:36 from Hessex, where I live. And yeah, there are always delays. So the good thing was I had an hour and a half twice a day to myself, right? I could do whatever I wanted. Usually it turned into 2 or 2.5 hours sometimes. But yeah, that aside, no, I agree. I think you're getting a lot more done working from home as well. And, you know, I noticed that, again, particularly as an interim, by having more companies, you can switch between companies easier, right? If you were stuck in an office, I don't know, on a Monday, and another company asked you to do some work, you know, it would be quite awkward to once of a sudden, if I say, pull up a different spreadsheet and work for another client yeah. for an hour. Although you would do the same on the other side, it's easier if you just kind of like, you know, separated by a screen rather than a desk.
Yes, I agree.
And I think to a certain extent, just thinking about that, that's probably why it's more advanced in the US, because if I say the whole tailor working or whatever it used to be called, is obviously more, you know, more common because of the distances, you know, so people are more used to working from home. Let's talk a little bit about lead generation. Obviously, you are in marketing, so you know a lot about lead generation, I hope, anyway. that's me talking as a salesperson. How do you market yourself? How do you get your leads?
Few different ways. So Curve is in a very fortunate position because it's an established brand and it has a good track record. So we do get quite a few inbounds and we yeah. get referrals as well. And when we make one client happy, that usually equals few additional leads. Because they make introductions, they speak with their peers, and then we get to speak to those companies. We also do same activity in terms of lead generation that we do for our clients.
Yeah.
We produce content. We run an outbound marketing campaign. We optimize the website for search engine optimization. We run some ads. So essentially, we use all the tools that we have in our ammunition in the same way we would use for our clients.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned referrals because a lot of people seem to rely very much on a network, right? But mm-hmm. I think what a lot of people don't realize, and you know, correct me, I think whether you know you would do lead gen as an interim fractional CMO or if I say under the umbrella of Curve, you are still the product, which means you still have to market yourself.
Yes.
Right. I find it's you know, you constantly need to be out there telling the story, as you mentioned, outbound. I'm an inbound marketing fan. You know, ever since HubSpot started that in, I think, 2008, I think it was. But that's a completely different rabbit hole. And then in terms of when we look at pricing, I mean, you're pricing differently, whether you go in as an interim and fractional, or do you, and then as Curve, right? So how do you price? Because is day rate, or if I say, to rephrase the question, is day rate still the best way of pricing?
We don't price our services on a daily basis. We actually find that it's more valuable for clients if we focus on the outcome,
yeah.
and then we price our service based on the scope of work that we define together with them, and we link it to the outcome. So it's never a day rate. We have channel specialists who have certain fixed monthly fees for their work. But when it comes to marketing strategy, It's very much based on what we agree with the client in terms of the goal and what needs to be done. And then we work out how much it would cost for them on a monthly basis.
So if someone came to you and wanted to work with you on a day rate, do you decline? I mean, you never turn around, turn away business, of course, but is that something you would or wouldn't do? You think, would you always try to work more on outcome based?
The answer is, I'm not sure. It hasn't happened. I would probably consider it. Usually I never say no. So it's always up for a discussion. Why not?
The reason we ask is because what I find, at least in say my line of work on the sales side, obviously sales can have a commission part, which say almost makes it easy. Although I think this marketing, you can bake that in as well. But also I do some marketing strategies as well. But often companies seem to come to me, you know, and they have a certain amount of days they want you to work, right? Mm-hmm. And I find it very difficult to turn them around to say, you know, yes, you can have me for 4 days a week or 3 days a week or 1 day a week, whatever the case might be. But what is it you actually want to achieve? So sometimes they just want you there for the time and want you to do certain tasks, which is fine. But I, you know, if I say I'm still learning to understand if that's the best way to price myself or for the clients. But it's, I think a lot of clients, at least in my experience, just have these blinkers on and just want to have day rates.
Yes, I think it's also, you know, probably a little bit old school. And if you think about it, maybe I take 3 hours to do a certain task, but for somebody who is a beginner, it would take them the whole day to do it. So it's really, you know, pricing based on hours you work. It's just not reasonable, especially within this line of work. So I feel that this outcome-based pricing is just more fair and more valuable for everybody.
Yeah.
Just again, going back to flexibility, it offers us more flexibility and more flexibility for the client as well.
I mean, I'm totally on board personally. I think it would make a lot of sense. I just seen it a lot from companies. Obviously, as you say, it's very old school, right? You're there, again, coming back to the office analogy, you're there for a day in the office, you're sitting there from 9 till 6 so you can work for that company.
Yeah.
But to your point, the outcome they want for that day might be done in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which then you could still charge them the whole day, but because you're there, they expect you to be there. I don't know if we can change that moving forward. You think we can get companies to think differently?
Essentially, the clients that we work with, I don't remember that anyone pushed back on the outcome-based pricing. Yeah. I think companies understand the value of it and companies embrace it. So we do get asked a question about the day rate, but when we explain that we don't work like this, we never have a pushback, and I don't remember the case when somebody said, no, it's a day rate or we're not working together.
Okay. Yeah, no, I don't think they would. But I think, as you said, it must take some explanation, right? It must take, obviously, changing their frame of mind to think a little bit different about compensation. Because if you compare to, say, someone you employ, right, you kind of expect that person to work, I don't know what the going rate is now, 37 and a half hours a week or 40 hours a week, whatever the case might be. And it just seems... I think it's just so ingrained, isn't it, to turn that around? But let's hope we can. I'm looking at the time. I have this new timer on my desktop, so I can now see the time nicely. So we're coming towards the end. What kind of advice would you give someone who you know might be sitting, if I say stuck in a rut, as we said earlier, in a job, you know, either being bored or thinking, oh, actually, I really like to go self-employed. I like to work for myself. What advice would you give them?
As I mentioned in the beginning, I was hesitant and I was a little bit afraid because, you know, as humans, we're not comfortable with uncertainty. But then once I made that decision once I got into it, I thought, oh, my God, why didn't I do this earlier? because the flexibility is very, very important to me right now. And I value it so much more than the benefits of that stability and predictability of the in-house environment. So yes, I guess that the biggest advice would be go for it. It is a little bit scary at the beginning, but it's really, really worth it.
That's a nice way to finish. So thank you so much for your time today.
Sure, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Did you enjoy today's experience? If you did, please leave me a 5-star rating on the outlet you're listening to and tell others about the show as well. Do you have ideas for guests? Any comments or questions? Please email me to podcast@valudapartners.com. And don't forget to check out www.valudapartners.com and subscribe to my monthly newsletter filled with insights on leadership and self-development articles. Until next time, this is your host, Volker Valuda.